Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning, you may be seated. The first case on our calendar is 06-1279, in re special docket number 73958. Mr. Schuster.
Mr. Chief Justice, Justices of the Court, good morning. I am Rick Schuster. I'm here today on behalf of appellants. Seated at council table with me is my partner, Nina Webb Lawton. I'm going to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal, and I will keep track of my time. The issue today is whether or not the 8th District Court of Appeals erred when it dismissed the appeal of the January 2006 order of the Common Pleas Court of Cuyahoga County as being premature. In other words, finding that that was not a final appealable order. The appellants answer that question, yes, they did err, because under this court's analysis and the analysis of 2505.02b4, we know, to begin with, that the trial court order denied a provisional remedy that's provided in the statute. We also know that that order prevents judgment in favor of the appellants on that specific provisional remedy. And finally, we know that the order denied appellants will deny appellants meaningful relief if we must wait for the complete cases to go to trial and judgment to be entered and an appeal taken.
Is the limited issue before us whether or not this is a final appealable order?
Yes, Your Honor, that is the issue.
That's really only what we have to try to figure out.
That is correct.
So here we are. Civil rules come in 1970. We're up to 2007 trying to figure out what a final appealable order is.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor.
And in this case, the statute said that the denial of this remedy is a final order, final appealable order.
That is correct. The statute was amended by the legislature in 2004 to make this provisional remedy a final order so it could be immediately appealed.
One of the arguments that's being advanced in opposition to your position is no one's been denied a remedy because we can wait until one or all of these cases has been litigated and there wouldn't be any denial of anything until that ultimately happens. How do you respond to that position?
Well, Your Honor, I think that position is incorrect for the following reasons. First, the legislature set up a comprehensive program for addressing the asbestos litigation crisis that we have in Ohio. This court has been dealing with that crisis for over a decade. The court has been appointing visiting judges in various counties throughout Ohio, trying to get their hands around the number of cases. There are now over 40,000 pending cases. The legislature put together a comprehensive program to address these cases and deal with them. And it is designed so that up front we will go through the cases and decide which cases should be heard first. Who are the individuals who are truly injured and sick? Hear those cases first. Put the judicial resources to those cases. Put the plaintiff's resources there. Put the defendant's resources there. If we wait and go through trial, then we have eviscerated this reform.
Do we have any issue with respect to the retroactivity application of this statute?
The retroactivity application of this statute will be brought up in another case that this court has accepted jurisdiction over. That is the Akeson case, which is in the middle of the briefing period now. You do not need to address the retroactivity issue at this point in this particular appeal.
And so all we're supposed to look at from your standpoint is whether or not this is a final appealable order.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
The General Assembly attempted or did make it clear that 2307 was to be a sort of an exception in the final appeal order in the statute that provides for final appeal orders. What is the authority of the General Assembly to do that? As you know, we've had a test for determining the provisional remedy.
Correct.
Does the General Assembly have sort of carte blanche authority to do that, to change their add to the definition?
Well, I believe, Your Honor, that as long as there's a rational basis for their decision, they may do that. They can't just arbitrarily do that. However, if there's nothing in our Constitution that bars the General Assembly from addressing this issue, they may do so. As the Court is aware, there are many provisional remedies that have been put in the statute by the General Assembly. This is simply another one of those put in the statute by the General Assembly specifically to deal with a problem that this court has recognized and that the General Assembly has recognized. It's been done to aid the courts of Ohio in dealing with the massive number of asbestos cases that have been filed.
I'd like to follow up on that. In terms of the effective remedy, it seems to me the argument is being made that the denial of effective remedy is the statutory mechanism that the legislature sets up. It's essentially going to eviscerate that. But what about the parties involved? What about your clients? It seems to me the argument is that it's really the claimants who aren't going to have an effective remedy if the statutory scheme is eviscerated. But how does it impact your clients?
Certainly, Your Honor. I think it's more than just the individual defendants in these cases. It also impacts the plaintiffs in the cases, and it impacts the courts. My clients, who are defendants in these cases, are impacted because under the system as it's set up now, the cases are so massive they will never be dealt with. As Judge Spellacy testified before the legislature, even though there are many visiting judges assigned, they cannot keep up with the new cases that are being filed, let alone deal with the 40,000 old cases that are there. My clients must maintain those cases on their books, reserve for them, report on them if they're publicly traded companies, and keep track of them. And that is a major undertaking for each of these defendants. With respect to the plaintiffs, it's the same, that they must keep track of these cases. And many plaintiffs, we still have plaintiffs whose cases were filed in 1995 or 96, who have not yet been given an opportunity to go forward, or who have not been told you're not sick. The legislature put together this type of a program so that the judges in our courts at the common pleas level would do an early determination of which plaintiffs actually have accrued causes of action, who is sick, and who should move forward then and be dealt with by the courts. I think that when you look at what the legislature have done, they actually set forth three tests at the beginning. They amended the provisional remedy section of the final appealable order statute to provide for three provisional remedies. One is a finding of a prima facie case under 2307.92. This court is not dealing with that issue today. The second is a finding under 2307.93A3A as to whether the court can constitutionally apply the medical criteria to pending cases on the effective date of the statute. That is the issue that was decided in the January 2006 order of the Common Pleas Court. And then the final provisional remedy that they put in here, the final question to be asked, is whether or not in a case that was pending where the court has found that they cannot constitutionally apply the new criteria, can the plaintiff come forward with prima facie evidence that they're actually injured under the old law, the law that existed prior to September 2nd, 2004. Those are the questions that the General Assembly has asked our courts to ask early in these cases. The court in Cuyahoga County had before it about 38,000 cases that were pending prior to September 2nd, 2004. The court determined that the most efficient way to address the question of the constitutionality of applying the new criteria was to do briefing in all those cases. Plaintiffs' counsel, and there are many plaintiffs' counsel in Cuyahoga County, were all invited to brief the issues. The briefing was done by the defendants also. Those briefs are in the record of the court. And those briefs address the specific issue as to whether the court could apply the new medical criteria two cases pending on September 2nd, 2004. The decision of that court, the January 2006 decision, decided that issue. That is the specific issue that the legislature in the provisional remedy asked the courts to decide. And that is what the Common Pleas Court, Cuyahoga County, decided. And it finally decided and totally decided that issue. After that point in time, defendants may no longer attempt to get the new medical criteria applied to cases pending prior to the effective date. So we've had a complete determination of that provisional remedy. And we will not have any sort of relief at the end of the day if we wait for these cases to go to trial, because the purpose of prioritizing these cases and making sure that the sick are dealt with first will have been lost.
So if we agree with your position, we would remand this case to the 8th District for a review of the determination made by the trial court.
That is correct.
Is that the remedy you're seeking?
That is the remedy
court?
We're seeking. Remand of the case to the 8th District Court of Appeals with instructions that it is a final appealable order, and asking them to do their job as the appellate level court and decide whether the trial court's decision was correct or incorrect. Well, if we have no other questions.
The trial court made essentially a constitutional analysis, the three judges.
Yes, sir. That's exactly what they did.
On that question, and decided that the relief that the statute that you sought to apply under the statute would be unconstitutional ex post facto.
Correct. That is exactly what they decided. They did it. All three judges sat on the hearing because each of them are assigned certain cases under the docket. They all came to the same conclusion and listed that in their order and signed off on that order. And it is from that order that we sought the appeal.
As Justice O'Donnell indicated, we're a long time out from the adoption of the civil rules. It seems that we have more questions instead of less on final appealable order. And the more I listen to those, the more I wonder how the statute is constitutional at all. That is, the final appealable order statute. Because isn't this all procedure?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, the issue of whether the final appealable order statute is constitutional was not brought to this court in this case. However, I would say that
always be on the table? I mean,
absolutely, Your Honor. You always have the option of finding
because with the modern courts amendment, the court took over procedure, excluding the legislature except for its role to approve or reject amendments to the rules.
I am familiar with the Modern Courts Amendment. I understand what you're saying. I believe that what the Modern Courts Amendment did was to say that the Supreme Court will make certain rules. It does not exclude the legislature from making rules. It excludes them from making procedural rules that conflict with what this court has done. I don't believe anything that they've done in amending the provisional remedy section of the final appealable order statute conflicts with what this court has done.
I mean, I will acknowledge we keep trying to interpret the statute, and I keep wondering, why do we even bother?
I think that the direction that this court gives on those issues is very important for the appellate courts below to know how to proceed. This is a brand new statute.
Understand that.
And the appellate courts need your guidance.
I don't mean it in those terms. Okay. I mean it in terms of why don't we view this as something that is court rulemaking authority instead of statutory, period.
I can only say that to this date, the court has not done that, right. And it is not the legislature is not excluded from amending that statute, and that is what they did here. I'd like to reserve some of my time if there aren't any further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Schuster. Mr. Wilson.
Please, the court, Thomas Wilson, Kelly and Ferraro, Cleveland, Ohio. Your Honor, at this time, I would like to split our time. I would take 5 minutes for myself and allow the last 10 minutes I would yield to David Roach, co-counsel in this case.
When the red light, the lights, that means you've used 5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, I want to kind of look at the broader picture, and I'll have Mr. Rhodes will actually discuss the statutory issues, but oftentimes we write briefs, and one of the things that we see in a lot of our briefs is this saying that your silence speaks volumes. Analogizing to the instant case, While there are many things that are before the court, what's not before the court is probably equally as critical. What's not before the court, number one, is there are no plaintiffs before the court. We have a number of large amount of individuals, but there's not a single individual plaintiff that has this cause of action that has been brought up here, which is why the Court of Appeal said the appeal was premature. Why is that important that there's no specific plaintiff here? Well, number one, because there's no factual background. Without a factual background, how do we have the appeal? How do we have the appeal to this court for to determine whether or not any specific individual has a cause of action that should or should not be going forward? I mean, the record here is devoid of any facts or findings which would preclude someone from going forward.
Does your argument include then over here on the...
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
That's okay. Does that mean then that on the special docket that every individual plaintiff is going to relitigate this issue all in each individual case? I mean, is that kind of what you're suggesting?
Well, at this point, Your Honor, I'm not sure where it would be going, because all we have, in my opinion, is an advisory opinion by the trial court telling us what it's going to do when the case gets to it. And until it gets to it, it can't make a determination because, for example, Your Honor, are we talking about asbestotics? Are we talking about smoking lung cancers? Are we talking about wrongful death cases? All various substantive issues that are different, but they all come under the same finding that the trial court's opinion and entry talk about.
Do you maintain then that the 2006 opinion by the Common Pleas Court should also be void because there's no individual plaintiff before it?
Well, I guess, Your Honor, the question of being void is difficult. I believe that the and have argued and attempted to argue in the Court of Appeals that House Bill 292 is retroactive as it retroactively is applied is unconstitutional. So whether or not the entire order, I believe the trial court's order is correct.
But you're attacking the appeal here would be the same basis there. You had no individual plaintiff. You had a decision relating to the entire docket rendered by the court. So it'd be inconsistent, wouldn't it, to take different positions as to that one versus being here in this court?
Well, as to that issue, I agree, Your Honor, but we go back to what did the trial court say? And the trial court basically said, I'm going to decide this way when somebody gets here. Okay, I'm all right with that. I don't think that's incorrect.
And that an advisory opinion just as much as what you're saying we might render?
Well, Your Honor, if this court sends back the case, if this court agrees with the Court of Appeals, then we're done. If the court sends it back to the Court of Appeals, then I'm not sure where we go, because then the Court of Appeals is still going to be faced with a determination as to the January 2006 order without any factual background. And quite frankly, Your Honor, even the defendants don't believe that you need to go forward without a factual background. Early on in 2004, I brought a mandamus, which was ultimately dismissed out by the Cuyahoga Court of Common or the Cuyahoga Court of Appeals for lack of standing. And when responding to the memorandum or responding to my motion for an alternative writ, the same defendant said this to the Court of Appeals. This is what they said in that mandamus. They said that in regard to ripeness. Ripeness is a question of timing which dictates that court should decide only existing substantial controversies, not hypothetical questions or possibilities. They went on to say, this is again the same defendants that are here today, they went on to say the asbestos bill requires a court to undergo an individualized analysis. In other words, amended substitute House Bill 292 anticipates personalized application. Now that's what they said. Again, when trying to throw out my mandamus. So I think that what we need to do is stay back with those particular issues. I see my time comes on, Your Honor, so I don't want to shortchange Mr. Rose.
I have one more question since you want to speak to the big picture. I don't understand why the plaintiff bar objects to those who are most seriously injured, who have active damages, come to the front. I don't
We don't, Your Honor, and they're going forward as we speak. See, that's the whole problem with what we're doing here. We have our cases teed up through 2007 and into 2008, and they're all the mesothelioma cases. These cases are going to go forward no matter how this court rules on this particular case until we finish the mesothelioma case docket. And I don't see an end to that one. So while the court is actually making a ruling as to the asbestotics, we're still moving forward with the sick people, though I disagree in general with the fact that someone who is a asbestotic is not sick. I believe they have been injured, and I believe that's under the common law.
Mr. Wilson, do you agree that we are here on an issue of a final appealable order?
That is correct, Your Honor. I agree with that 100%.
And do you see that retroactivity is implicated in this appeal or not?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I believe counsel was correct. This will be coming up in the certified area. But I do believe that until a party has a determination, there's no provisional remedy, and that, therefore, there's no this is an interlocutory order.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Your Honors, if I may.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Mr. Rhodes.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I'd like to very slightly disagree with my colleague about whether retroactivity is implicated in this case. It's implicated in only one sense, and that is, although as I shall address shortly, we believe that the statutory language controls this and does not make this a final appealable order. There is a canon of statutory interpretation to avoid unnecessary determination of constitutional questions. And if the statute were interpreted as the appellant urges, and on the first page of their reply brief, they make a proposition of law. As mandated by the statute, any party to an asbestos case may immediately appeal a finding made by a trial court under RC 2307.93A3. They're making it blanket. If there's a finding, it's appealable, and essentially they're disregarding the requirement that there be no meaningful or effective remedy from a final appeal. If that were to be accepted by this court, it would implicate a question of retroactivity, because when these plaintiffs filed their case, there was no such ruling that there was an automatic right of appeal for a defendant as a buffer before going to a day in court. Under the rule that existed when they filed their case, there was no automatic right of appeal, and they could go to trial before having an appeal. That creates a dilemma for someone seeking to avoid a constitutional problem. Either that's a substantive decision to create this automatic right of appeal, in which case it's a substantive change that's retrospective, or it's a procedural decision, in which case it implicates a concern that the legislature is not supposed to dictate such procedure. Those are not issues that I propose this court should decide today, but they are issues that counsel in favor of them accepting the very reasonable interpretation of the statute, which preserves the requirement that on an individual case-by-case basis, there must be some factors that make the normal course of appeal meaningless before you can have this special interlocutory appeal.
So your suggestion there is, on this fine point, is that there is a retroactive constitutional issue lurking in the background, even on a determination of whether or not this is a final appealable order.
Yes, Your Honor, because we're not applying the statute as it existed when these people filed their suit. We're trying to apply to their previously filed suit a subsequently enacted change in the law.
Wouldn't you say that we have generally assumed, when we're talking about what is or is not a final appealable order, we're thinking this is procedure?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor. Ordinarily, that would be considered procedure. But as you have pointed out, Your Honor, that creates its own constitutional
right.
problem.
Going back to what Justice Stratton asked, and from prior cases, my sense was, until the legislature did this, Judge Spellacy and Hannah, and then Judge Sweeney had worked out with the plaintiffs some mechanism for prioritizing cases and claimants anyway.
Correct, Your Honor. These cases that we're talking about today...
And would it... I mean, it seems that the idea, whether it's done by courts or by the legislature, of trying to keep those who are exhibiting actual ill health and dying in many cases go to the front of the bus in terms of having their claims determined is an appropriate goal, isn't it, of both the legislature and the courts?
Your Honor, it is absolutely appropriate. It's appropriate for counsel, too, and we have worked diligently to do that. There's not much disagreement about the program that the judges at the trial level have created in Cuyahoga County. It's working. The cases we're talking about here are not moving forward ahead of cases that are more serious. There is a real prioritization going on.
Mr. Rhodes, I want to follow up on that issue and maybe approach this issue from a different standpoint. I don't know that it's about which cases are going forward as much as it's about cases that are languishing. The General Assembly has crafted an administrative dismissal, which really means that the cases are not on an active docket, but no prejudice inures to a claimant whose case would be administratively dismissed. Do you agree with that assessment?
No, absolutely not, Your Honor. And I argued this case in the trial court, and I think the court was correct in saying that there is very serious detriment because they've changed the standards for what constitutes injury. And people who are actually palpably injured cannot meet the criteria that this bill sets forth.
If I understand the legislation, there's a requirement that a medical professional provide a report indicating certain medical conditions exist or don't exist.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And if that's not there, then the trial court administratively dismisses the case, but it doesn't affect filing, it doesn't affect the statute of limitations, it really only affects scheduling for trial.
It affects whether you can ever come forward with the case, because there are people who can never meet the very restrictive criteria that have been done. Now, if the criteria were benign, wise criteria that very closely corresponded to whether someone's really injured, it might be less objectionable, although it shouldn't be legislative criteria. It should be common law case development. Your Honor, if I may, I'd like to...
So, counsel, you have difficulty with even the prospective application of this requirement for a medical certificate?
I think it's unwise. The question's not...
But that's not before us.
It's not before the court at all.
Of the content of the medical application or the medical criteria, that's not before this court, and nor will it be.
That's quite correct, Your Honor. We believe that it may not validly be applied to conduct and impact that occurred before its date, which would include most cases yet to be filed, I believe. But that's for another day, Your Honor. Right now, the question is whether this is a final appealable order. There's a middle ground between what the defendants want, which is to say every single case is automatically appealable, and it's automatically there's no meaningful remedy by a regular appeal. And what they claim is our position, which is that no case is ever appealable because there's always a meaningful remedy. That middle ground is in keeping with the traditional role of the final judgment rule, that you look case by case at the specific circumstances that create the result that there is no meaningful remedy. The Constitution, the same section on retroactivity, Article 2, Section 28, limits appeals to judgments or final orders. So the legislature is not writing on a blank slate when it redefines final orders. There must be some notion of finality, and that notion of finality is captured in keeping with case law around the country by... I see my time is up, is it?
You can finish your sentence.
That is captured in keeping...
A long sentence.
With case law around the country by the requirement that there be no meaningful remedy on final appeal. That's what makes it final, Your Honors.
Are you familiar with the Stahl-Heber case?
I'm sorry, no, Your Honor, I'm not.
Okay, the 12th District has ruled on this issue. You're not familiar with that?
I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with the case.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rhodes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Schuster, you've saved a minute and a half of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to address the first question raised, whether there were any plaintiffs involved in the decision made. There were thousands of plaintiffs involved. This issue was thoroughly briefed by their lawyers.
Counsel, if we determine that this is a final appealable order in this case, and then the issue of retroactivity gets resolved, and say that's resolved in your favor ultimately. Now when individual determinations are made for individual claimants, is it back through the mill one more time, final appealable order, if the trial judge says this claimant is in, does not get administratively dismissed, are you arguing that you have the right under the statute to once again appeal that immediately?
Your Honor, the way the provisional remedy was set up, the court was asked to first determine this constitutional issue, which is under 2307.93A3A. If the court determines that the legislation can be applied to pending cases, then there will be a determination as to whether the medical criteria is met. In fact, there have been hundreds of cases across Ohio where the determination has been met, the medical criteria have been applied.
What I'm trying to ask is if we resolve this case by saying this is a final appealable order, does that mean that that's also a green light to appeal when the individual claimant that the trial judge says is meets the criteria, and you say no they don't, one of your clients says no they don't, we want to appeal that, does the determination in this case also give you a green light for a second interlocutory appeal?
If the ruling was in our favor from the 8th District, and then the trial court went back and applied the medical criteria in the statute to certain individuals, if there was a dispute with that decision, either the plaintiff or the defendant could appeal it.
So the implications of this case are not just for this case, but they then come down to a second level of appeals while the litigation is pending.
In fact, tomorrow, this court will be hearing in the Senate case an issue of a case where the specific medical criteria were applied to the Senate lawsuit, and that has been appealed. Again, I believe that's an action asking whether that's a final appealable order out of the 8th District Court of Appeals.
Thank you, Mr. Schuster.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.